to finish off what we've been talking about. So we're discussing the first machlokes shonim and shas. Essentially, on the one hand, the view of Rashi that, yes, the Mishnah should be taken as it sounds, and saying that you cannot fulfill Shema early before it takes a kochazim, and if the shul davens early, then it's not for the purposes of Shema, even though you say Shema and shul. So then that leaves me with two questions to ask. Why do we bother? And when do you fulfill the mitzvah? So why do we bother? He says it's like Ashrei, Kedilamu Tfilim and Torah Tivri Torah, and we talked about what implications that has for the concept of Smicha Zgul Tfilo. And in terms of what do you do, what's the strategy? So says Rashi, you fulfill the obligation with Kriya Shema Hamita, one paragraph of Kriya Shema. And we saw the Tosfos didn't like this, focused specifically on the backup plan. We noticed the interesting point yesterday, that Wednesday, that Rashi and Tosfos essentially agree in practice, they both agree in all the facts of what's happening, that you're going to shul early, saying Shema Shmoneh Esrei early, and saying Kriya Shema Hamita. Just Rashi feels that it's the Kriya Shema Mitzvah that's pointing for Shema because you're not Yotzei in the early davening. And Tosfos holds the opposite, that you are Yotzei in the early davening and Kriya Shema Mitzvah is not acceptable for the Mitzvah of Shema.
According
to one of the views of, especially according to one of the views of Tosfos. So let's come back to that in a second. You're raising an important point in general. And so Tosfos has got two halves to it. The first half is attacking Rashi specifically in terms of the backup plan rather than in terms of the issue itself, and then offering their own suggestions. So in terms of the backup plan, so it says, therefore, Tosfos raises four questions, saying Kriya Shema Mita is not acceptable because it's only one paragraph, again, which Rashi clearly is aware of. Rashi says the first paragraph, Yotzei, that there's no brachos at that point, the brachos are only recited earlier, and that there's no smichas gula tfila, as it mentions, because the Gemara, a little bit later on, in Daf Dalet, when it talks about the question of smichas gula tfila for Meiriv, essentially contrasts it with the other view. What's the other view? That the structure of Meiriv should be inverted, that there should be Shmoneh Esrei first and then Shema. What the Gemara calls Tfilos Be'emsa Tiknun, that your day would have Shema in the morning and Shema at the end. It's framed by Shema with three Shmoneh Esrei in the middle, Shacharis Mincha Meiriv, and we reject that view. But according to Rashi, says Tosfos, you're bringing that view back. You're saying that you go to shul early, you're yotzei only the Shmoneh Esrei part, and then at the end of your day, you're Kriya Shema Mita, you're saying Shema. It's essentially the opinion of Tfilos Be'emsa Tiknun, which is a beautiful structure, but it's not the view that we follow. And how is Rashi doing that? And the fourth view, as we said, not really clear what Tosfos' objection is, but that the fact that the Gemara says that Kriya Shema Lamita is for the Mazikin, is basically as a protection from the damaging forces, and Talmud Chacham wouldn't have to say it, because Talmud Chacham is presumably involved in other learning at the same time, which could have the equal effect, and therefore that's also some type of objection. It sounds like the objection is that not everyone's going to say it, it's not a pure obligation, again, more of a policy objection rather than a inherent obligation. It's not clear why if somebody says, listen, under other circumstances I wouldn't say it, but because I need to fulfill my obligation of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, therefore I will say it, why that shouldn't address Tosfos' question. So apparently Tosfos, again, is coming from a policy consideration. So just take a second and talk about...
So out of the three, the strongest one, it ends up being kind of a sandwich, not of the three partial, so the three partial, which many people do.
Right, so guys, so you're saying the strongest one, because it's the only one that you couldn't actively counteract, so to speak, that if one wanted to say, well, I'll address these questions, so three out of four of them you could address. So that's true. That does make a difference, does distinguish between those three and the other one. However, it's also important to note that many of them are not being addressed, even according to Rashi, because in terms of the last one, you're right, because even if the person wouldn't otherwise say it, so he'll make sure to say it. But what about the first two, the one paragraph and no brachos? So Rashi is not telling you to address those. It's certainly, in terms of the one paragraph issue, Rashi is explicit that you're not addressing that. Rashi says, the Kriyas Parsha Rishon, just Rashi's acknowledging, which also makes Tosfos' question a little bit harder to understand, because Tosfos is as if Rashi doesn't know this, and Rashi is clearly acknowledging it. So if Rashi says, listen, what we tell you to do is make sure to say Kriyas Shema Hamita and say all three paragraphs and recite the brachos, then that would be apparently there, but that doesn't seem to be what he's advising. So Rav Kook, there's a sefer called there's also another sefer called Tov Roi, which collects Rav Kook's time in some other places and organizes them based on the state of Hadaf. So he suggests, and Rav Schechter, one of his friends, has a similar approach, that apparently one could explain Rashi's view, for the most part, as that Rashi is essentially saying that, first of all, this is what he thinks is the mitzvah d'oraisa of Shema. Right, during our introductory discussion last week, so we talked about the fact that there's a range of views as to what is the mitzvah in the Torah of Shema. Is it one pasuk? Is it the first paragraph, two paragraphs, three paragraphs? And Rashi is usually listed with the view that the first paragraph is the obligation of the Torah. How do we know? Because of this Rashi, it sounds like his focus on the first paragraph is that he understands that is the mitzvah in the Torah. So, okay, but there's still a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So Chazal at least tell you to say all three paragraphs and to say it with the brachos. So apparently Rashi understands that for the purposes of Drabbanan, we can rely on the broader view. We can rely on the view that's more makel. And it's only for the purposes of the Raisa that we have to be machmir to have absolute faith. He's saying, so for that, you could rely on the Kriya Shema Lamita. You know, it's comparable, for example, let's say the range of views as to what you should do if you're an American in Eretz Yisrael for Yom Tov Sheni. So there are those who observe Yom Tov Sheni, those who don't, and there are those who are machmir for deraisas because of the question. So sometimes you have such a split. So maybe that's what Rashi is saying here, that for the Drabbanan, that we can have this broader view, that and for just for the mitzvah deraisa, that we have to be machmir for, and according to him, the mitzvah deraisa is just the first paragraph of Shema. So in terms of your question about the Shach Bacha, so it's a sugya in general, and it's worth being aware of, that the Torah presents, and some of the Gemaras here specifically will draw on this, that the Torah presents the obligation, the dual obligation of Shema. We assume it's a nighttime obligation and a daytime obligation. But how does the Torah convey that? By using the words b'shach b'cha uvekumacha, not by saying yom v'layla. The Torah could have said you have to read the Shema layla v'yom. It says b'shach b'cha uvekumacha. So how do we understand that? Is that just a poetic way of saying night and day? Could have just said night and day, but instead we say when you lie down or when you get up. Or is there a reason why, or is there a more direct reason why the Torah uses a different word, that maybe they're not exactly identical terms? That maybe b'shach b'cha is either a more or less expansive reference and is not identical to how we would halachically define night and day. So that's an important question sometimes, to figure out what exactly these words are coming to say. So apparently maybe you're correct, that maybe on a Drabbanan level, B'shach B'cha has a different definition than on a Torah level. And maybe Rashi's understanding that there's a broader Hagdara for what's acceptable on a level of Drabbanan, or for the mitzvot of Drabbanan that are involved. But the pure Daraisa, that has a narrower time frame, so that's all you have to address later on. Just to make sure you get the first paragraph in during the time that is deraisa. And parenthetically, we mentioned that neither the view of Rashi nor Tosfos is accepted in our practice today. Rashi almost makes it, but by throwing in Kriyas Shema Lamita really takes a curve there at that point. And that really in practice what we do is we assume, mostly like Rashi, that we're not Yotzei with the early Shema. But where we change from him is that we advocate that all three paragraphs be recited again after Tzeis. And we don't necessarily recommend in the context of Kriyas Shema Lamita, we say as soon as you remember after Tzeis to recite them. Strictly speaking, ideally, this is something that everyone's always machmir for. But it should really be before dinner. If you're eating dinner, let's say after Tzeis HaKochavim, and you realize you haven't said Shema yet because you davened at an earlier minyan, so really, the mitzvah and the Torah of Shema should come before dinner. So not everyone necessarily always remembers that, but at least after Seis Tekochavim, which we recited at an earlier time, we don't necessarily wait until Kriya Shema Lamita. Of course, if you're about to go to bed and you realize you haven't said Kriya Shema yet, so then one would recite it specifically at that time, but again, with these three paragraphs. And we also mentioned that there was a, Rav Moshe Feinstein, for example, has a tshuva where he notes that there seems to be two accepted practices today as to whether one recites the brachos again when he repeats Kriya Shema. I think the more common practice is not to recite the brachos, just to say the three paragraphs of Kriya Shema, but there is a view to recite the brachos. So again, in terms of what you were saying, that one could in theory intentionally address the issues of Rashi, so that's a little bit what we do. That certainly in terms of the one paragraph versus three paragraphs, we do intentionally address it. We say it on purpose and don't necessarily only rely on the existing din of Kriya Shema Lamita, and whether or not we insert the brachos, so that's a matter of different practice. The Rush over here quotes Rav Amram Gon, that Rav Amram Gon had an interesting opinion which reflects something about Berachos Kriya Shema, and he says that if one is reciting Shema like this outside of the context of Ma'ariv itself, so then he says that one should recite a bracha v'asher kishana b'mitzvosa v'tzivano in the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, which is not our practice. It reflects his idea that however you understand Berachos Kriya Shema, whether it is a tefillah structured around Shema, or whether it's a bracha for Kriya Shema, either way, it does accomplish the role of being a bracha for Kriya Shema, that apparently you need a bracha for Kriya Shema. The Berachos Kriya Shema, whether that's their primary purpose or not, accomplishes that purpose, and that if you're saying it outside of that, you have to stick in a new bracha again. That's not what we do, but it reflects a certain understanding.
It's a Ben Shimshon.
That's a Ben Amram, it's Amram.
Oh, Amram.
Yeah, Amram.
Well, that's a very, very bothered that he innovated in bracha.
So apparently he understood that bracha was being said, and when we said the brachos of Shva include that bracha, so if there was never a bracha around, then he came and said, you know what, I think we should make a bracha, it would be certainly surprising. But apparently he's saying that he thinks this bracha is being recited, included in the brachos Kriya Shema, and if we say our Shema separated from that, then we have to fix that by sticking a bracha in. So, in terms of your question, some of the things we do actively address and some we don't, and you're right, that the one that really is outside of our ability to affect is the question of the structure of davening, that if Kriya Shema is supposed to specifically be before Shema Esrei, and that's the whole thrust of the Sneha school with Tzilo Sugya, so then that seems to be Tosis' strongest question. On Rashi, it's not something we have the ability to even intentionally try to compensate for.
But that's definitely the Rabbanan.
Kriya Shema of Sneha school with Tzilo Rabbanan, right. So that's what it would seem like, yeah.
And you recommend even on Shabbat, if you daven early, to hold back on Kiddush until the Shema?
So back in Kiddush? Oh, well, it's about dinner. No, it depends what time it is. So I'm saying, but let's say somebody is eating dinner specifically after, say, Sekochavim, which may or may not be the case. So then if it's a Zman Shema, then one should ideally be reciting Shema as soon as he realizes that he's hit the point of Chiyuv. And ideally, if you have their meal in front of them, really Shema should be first. And,
so on a typical night, let's say if you're Koveya to Damar late, and it's says, then you're going to eat. You should say Shema, anyway?
That's a good question. There are those who would be mafia for that, and there are those who would rely on the idea that having a set minion is enough of a reminder. Not everyone is happy with that far. And then there's an in-between. In general, one could argue that one should really not eat dinner before Ma'ariv at all. Even not just Shema, but the whole Ma'ariv experience. If it's Zman for Ma'ariv, then one should maybe not have their dinner before Ma'ariv. So what does that mean? So there are those who will say, okay, so then make sure to have Ma'ariv first, even be Yechidus. And there are Megidoli Harabanim who would say that that's preferable to daven without the minyan for dinner rather than wait till afterwards. That's the less common practice, but there are those who would take that view. Other than that, then there are those who would say that on the other extreme, basically, that if one plans on going to an established minyan, then that is enough of a reminder to address the issue that Chazal had with your forgetting to possibly do the mitzvah of davening. And then there might be an in-between view that one could say, listen, for Shmuel Esrei, I'm willing to, for Ma'ariv itself, I'm willing to rely on the later minyan, but maybe for the mitzvah the rites of Shema, maybe I should say Shema early, so all three of these exist.
So why don't we say then, what would preclude us from saying, Daven Shema Esrei, Daven Ma'ariv Yechidus, and go Daven Ma'ariv again in a minyan. It's a whole different key of mitzvah.
Except that one can't really daven twice when he's already davening.
But
why do you daven all day?
Right. So that's actually it's interesting. You're touching on two important sugyas, or three important sugyas. Three separate sugyas that are relevant to what you're bringing up. One sugya that's relevant is the question of tefillah nedava. You said halavai. That's the phrase in Gemara Daf Chaf Aleph, which is the source for the concept of tefillah nedava. That a halavai person should daven all day long, which seems to suggest if we're davening at any point, that's the basis for a voluntary Shmoneh Esrei. That's not going to fully address as much as your intent. If your intent is to daven in the Dava, so then there is such an option. Although it was machlokas between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan whether or not we do Nedavas nowadays, because the Shulchan Aruch has a very, very intimidating list of requirements in terms of what type of kavana we should have for an extra Shmoneh Esrei. And the Shulchan Aruch concludes, if you can't reach that level, then halavai should be able to have kavana for the obligatory tefillos, so you don't frivolously, so to speak, or without great justification, that we don't daven the davas nowadays. There are circumstances where we do, but usually we don't do it so quickly. Second of all, the question that you're addressing is, there is a discussion in general, if you fulfill a mitzvah in a way that's not mehudar, it's not l'chachila, it's not ideal, is it possible to go back and do it again? Let's say you picked up an esrog, and it turns out later on you find a beautiful esrog that was better than the esrog you had beforehand. So can you be yotzei the mitzvah again, so to speak, and fulfill the mitzvah with a more mehudar version?
But what permits you to say krishma again?
The krishma you can always say, because krishma is just psukim. So that's not an issue. Shmon esrog is a tefillah, it's a harder question.
But that's interesting. Shmoneh Esrei is Durabanan.
Mm-hmm. You need a heter to say it, so to speak. Uh-huh. Which we'll get to, which relates to some other sugyas. But Shema, and the Gemara said explicitly, in terms of Shema, you can always say Shema, basically, because Shulchan in the Torah, you can always repeat. But there's really two questions involved. You want to know what permits you, and also will you accomplish anything? So in terms of davening Ma'ariv twice, would I, A, be permitted to do it, and B, if I did it, would I even accomplish anything? So let's say the case of an esrog, I could pick up an esrog a million times on sukkahs, but will I accomplish anything? It could be that maybe I won't. There's a famous question, it sounds like a brain teaser. It's attributed to Reb Chaim Brisker, but it happens to be in print from his father, the Beis HaLevi, the Tshuvas Beis HaLevi. You find this exact story, but when they tell the story, they tell it from Reb Chaim Brisker, that he was asked, if you have a choice of taking two esrogim, so you have an esrog, one esrog is definitely kosher, but you're not sure if it qualifies as mehudar. And you have another esrog that is gorgeous, definitely mehudar, but you have a suffix whether it's kosher or not for some reason. So what should you do? What should you take first? So you might think your priority, the most important thing is the kosherness of the esrog, so pick that up first. But the approach that they give is that the other way around, that you should pick up the one that's definitely mehudar, not so clearly kosher first. Why? Because if you pick up the definitely kosher one first, then you're done. So either it's mehudar or it's not. If it's mehudar, great. If not, you're done. It's over. You can't accomplish anything by picking up the mehudar one afterwards. While if it's the other way around, if you pick up the possibly not kosher one first, so if it's kosher, great. It's kosher mehudar. And if not, then you'll cover your bases by picking up the definitely kosher one afterwards. So there's a whole sugi about this in general, a sugi being mostly in the later sources, never the sugi in the Gemara, about if you fulfill a mitzvah already, can you then go back and make it more perfect? That's broadly speaking a little bit relevant to what you're saying, but in terms of tefillah, so we're really not going to do that because of the lack of ability to be davening again.
Just and, one more question on that, I'm not clear, I'm sorry. If you were to daven Ma'ariv at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, would you daven Ma'ariv again?
So 3 o'clock being before flag in almost all parts of the world. And, right. So then, presumably, it wouldn't be yotzei according to anyone.
Oh, so the question is, you might be yotzei according to some deos, so therefore you're...
Right, so it's almost like crazy. It's pretty much all or nothing, because before flag you're not really yotzei according to anybody. After flag, for a matter of you're probably yotzei, well, we'll get into this a little later, probably yotzei according to almost everybody, or certainly according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that would presumably make you... in good shape. Parenthetically, it's a whole other sugya, but just because it's relevant to your question, you should also be aware that the Gemara talks about somebody, let's say, for example, it could happen when the clock changes and your routine changes. So let's say you you normally, it's too early to daven mincha at 1 o'clock. So you daven mincha at a late mincha every day. And then the clock changes, all of a sudden you can daven mincha. So the first day you daven mincha at 1 o'clock, you forget that you did that, then you still go to your 5 o'clock mincha. So you're halfway through mincha and you realize, wait a minute, I daven mincha already at 1 o'clock. So the Gemara says you got to stop. Because you can't, you don't have the right to daven mincha twice. So you're in the middle of Shmona Esrei, you have to say, okay, I realize I made a mistake, you just stop, you don't finish the Shmona Esrei. So there's a whole discussion which the Gemara brings up, and the Rambam, right, they have a whole story about. Why don't we say, okay, but you can voluntarily have a tefillas nedava, so once I'm halfway through Shmona Esrei and I realize I davened already, let's just finish and tag it as a nedava. So apparently you can't do that. Apparently you can voluntarily offer a nedava when that's what you decide to do to begin with, but when you start off thinking it's a real Shmona Esrei, a real obligatory Shmona Esrei, and then halfway through you want to convert it to a nedava, you can't do that. It has to be set aside that way from the beginning. Happens to be, when it comes to Maariv, there's a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ravid, whether that's also true about Maariv. That maybe since the Gemara calls Maariv on some level a Rishus, maybe we'll get to talk about that a little bit, so that maybe it is categorically grouped with Nedava, and that maybe Maariv is subject to being converted in the middle to a Nedava. So that's a whole separate sugya, but it has to do with the whole question of can one basically daven Maariv twice? And what if one thought he was davening once? Let's say, so again, we'll change the scenario. The clock changed, and now he could daven Maariv at 7, which he couldn't until now. And he goes to the 10 o'clock Maariv, forgetting that he davened the 7 o'clock Maariv. So can he continue in the middle, if he does it by accident, if he's halfway through and he realizes he davened the Maariv already, can he continue or not? That itself was a debate among the Rishonim.
Question. So here, a person has a choice every night to daven with the 4 Seis of the Minyan.
Mm-hmm.
Or after say something.
Mm-hmm.
So, what should going in, lechatzila, what should a person do?
So, it's a question before dinner or after dinner?
Dinner would change, but dinner will change, obviously, depending on the season, possibly. But yeah.
Right, so
that could be a factor for sure.
So, it's probably, so I think what your question basically, if I understand your question correctly, I think you're trying to decide what's a better thing to go for, to dive in with a minion before dinner, or to daven with a minion later, because all opinions will say that after it's safe, according to that all opinion. So probably the first is better, because we don't normally find such a recommendation that one shouldn't take advantage of an early Shema. Although you have the issue, those who would say that Shema with Smith School of Tefillah is probable. Say, the truth is, I'm going to take that back. You probably would find a range of recommendations as to what's better. That maybe it's preferable to say Shema in the time of Shema and to have the whole package in order, you'll address this question in the school with Fila. So you probably will find a range of things as to what's happening.
Took dinner out of the equation?
If you took dinner out of the equation, so then for sure, probably better to daven later and get the whole package in straight. Right, so if you're going to have 11 o'clock dinner, so then.
Nowadays you can daven. You can eat dinner well before, say,
You could eat dinner in broad daylight, or you could have dinner afterwards. That would be the most muhudr kaladeh's way to do it.
And once you start, you don't have to stop.
From my break, correct. And
there's no
in Shabbos, actually, right, that once if you start before, then you'd be able to continue. Okay, so, but in terms of Tosfos's alternative plan, so we actually didn't get to that so much. It seems that we probably will continue this into the next week a little bit, but let's try to talk about it a little bit now. That Tosfos's alternative plan is two possible answers. So one answer is the Ri, that the thrust of what they say is to disagree fundamentally with Rashi, that the Kriya Shema and Shul, you are Yotzei with, even though it's before Tzei. So how do we reconcile that with the Mishnah? So one approach, the approach of the Ri, is to say that if, as we look at this daf, so we'll see that there actually are other opinions as to when exactly Zman of Shema is, and maybe in practice we actually follow one of these opinions which adjusts it slightly, which is interesting. It's hard to believe that the Zman that we end up davening happens to just coincide with one of these other opinions, but that's the other approach. But more discussable position for now is Rebbeinu Tam. The Rebbeinu Tam, as we started to explain on Wednesday, says this relates to the debate between Rebbe Yehuda and Chachamim. That Rebbe Yehuda says Mincha goes till Plag, and Chachamim say it goes until dark. So those who are saying Shema after Plag are relying on the view of Rabbi Yehuda. And even though you might find people also davening Mincha up until dark, like Chachamim, that's okay too, because the Gemara says you can follow whichever view you want. Avid Kamar Avid, Vid Avid Kamar Avid. So there were a number of striking things about this position. We alluded to the Beis HaLevi, we didn't talk about so much what he actually says, but we said the Beis HaLevi as a Mar Malkum, we can take a look at. In Siman Tes, he addresses the question of why Rebbeinu Tam assumes there's any connection between Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and Kriyas Shema Shalmeir. There's two leaps that he makes. One, just because Mincha is over, who says that Maariv starts? There's no obvious link between the two. It could be because there's no man zone in between. You don't have to assume that Maariv starts automatically when Mincha is over. And two, even if it does, who says that Shema goes along with that? That's our whole premise already, that there's a distinction. So those are two big leaps within the time of the making, and this Beis HaLevi talks about that in his Tshuva. Now we mentioned also the Shakas Aryeh's objection, that he's assuming that the Gemara is licensed to follow either view, the Avid Kamar Avid, the Avid Kamar Avid, is based on the premise of Safik Drabanan Lakulu, that Sila is a Din Drabanan, and therefore you have the right to be lenient. That Shema is a Mitzvah Minat Torah, so who says you have the right to be lenient when it comes to that? So therefore, says the Shakas Aryeh in Siman Gimel, assumes that Rebbeinu Tam is assuming that Shema is Drabanan. That's against our consensus, even though there was an opinion in the Gemara and Rishonim who say that. The overwhelming consensus nowadays is that Shema is Daraisa, and Rebbeinu Tam, being premised on a different assumption, has to be rejected, according to the Shakas Aryeh. So we started to explain that it's not the only way to understand what Rebbeinu Tam is saying. And we mentioned there are two different models for this idea of being able to pass in any way you want, so to speak. So the Rishonim offer two different points of comparison. One is the Rush. The Rush over here, the first Siman, the Rush says that there is a parallel to be drawn from the Gemara in Erevin about Shedra the Golgolas, about you have a skull and a spine of an animal. So if you want to know if the spine is considered to be deficient, if it's missing a vertebra, so does that make it deficient or not? Why do we care if it's deficient? Well, if it's deficient, it's going to be a nevel. It's not going to be a trefer, rather. It's not going to be kosher. But it's also not going to be a metame. It's not a complete skeleton. So is that a kula or a chumra? To say the threshold is higher, you have to have two vertebrae missing in order to make it deficient. Is that a kula or a chumra? So it depends. If you're interested in kashrus, if you're interested in trefes, so then it's a kula to make the threshold higher. If you're interested in Tumah, so then it's a Chumrah to make the threshold higher. So the Gemara says, who do we follow on this issue? We follow Beis Hillel, but Beis Shammai is also an acceptable approach. If you want to follow Beis Shammai, you can do that as well, says the Gemara, as long as you don't mix and match. So let's take the Kulas of both, that the Gemara uses the term Rasha, to take the Chumras of both, to say, I'll be Machmer, that it's not kosher, but it is metame. So then the Gemara applies the pasuk "Kaksil b'chayshul chaylech," that a person who's not so intelligent is walking around in darkness, so to speak, and stumbling all over the place because he's not following any kind of a coherent path. Doesn't make sense to go in mixed and match approach, neither l'kula nor l'chumra. And that was the view the Rush used. Those are the parallel the Rush uses. While the Meiri in the fourth paragraph uses the Gemara, the Mishnah and Taurus, which is quoted by the Gemara himself in Daf Yud, of Shnei Shvilin. If you have two paths, one path is Tamei, one path is Torah, you don't know which one is which, you come and you ask the rabbi, you say, I walked along one path, what's my story? The rabbi has the right to say you're Torah. Suffolk Tumah versus Rabin is Torah. Then he says, somebody comes afterwards and says, I walked on the other path, what's my story? Rabbi has the right to say the same thing to him. Safik Tumah b'Shus Rabbim is Tar. Even though he knows mathematically it can't be. It can't be that they both were Tar. One of the paths was Tameh. Doesn't matter. You have the right to say you're both Tar. While if they come together, that's too much. If they take a race and each one takes another approach, and then they meet up in the middle and they say, okay, Rabbi, I took this path, he took that path, what's our story? So then he can't, it's too much of a blatant contradiction to say both of them together, you're both Tar, when we know one of them isn't. And that's no longer an option. What exactly you do instead, not clear, but you can't say both of them, you're both okay. right, like the famous joke, the rabbi says to the first guy who's arguing, you're right, says the second guy who's arguing, you're right, and then his wife says, they can't both be right, and says, you're right too. So they can't both be right when they're coming to you together and saying opposite things. But when they come to you separately, then you can tell each one that he's right. So the Miri compares this whole ability to switch back and forth, so to speak, to that Mishnah. So the Stipler quotes both of these in invoking the question, so when the Gemara says you can follow either view, does that also mean you can switch around? So can you say, all right, let's say, for example, today, can you say, all right, so after Plag, I will still daven Mincha after Plag, because I'm following the view of Chachamim, that I can go until dark. But then I'll daven Myra before it's safe still, because I'll follow the view of Rabbi Huda, that Plag is the cutoff when I start thinking about Myra. So that's one type of blatant contradiction, so to speak. We call it tarte de sastre, two things that contradict each other. But what if it's less blatant? Let's say today I want to daven Myrav after Plag, it works out for me today. And then on, let's say yesterday I davened Mincha right before Tzeis, because that worked out for me yesterday. So can I switch off from one day to the next, even if I don't switch off within the same day? To shoot to the end for a second, so because we'll have to explain how these correlate a little bit more next week, but just in terms of practice, so our practice is, and we'll explain how this practice seems to develop based on the sugya, that we don't seem to be concerned about switching from day to day. No one ever says that you have to have a consistent lifetime policy, that you can daven Mincha yesterday before Tzeis, and today you want to make early Shabbos, you want to daven Ma'ariv after Plag. That's acceptable. No one nowadays seems to object to switching back and forth from day to day. Switching within one day is more frowned upon. Switching within one day is considered to be a tarte de sastre. And then the question comes up, well, what about Friday night? So Friday night, many shuls do have minyanim that are scheduled to create a tarte de sastre, so to speak, where their early Friday night davening will be putting Mincha and Ma'ariv both in the same zone. So what about that? So there are many, ideally to make everybody happy, you'll try to set it up not that way. You'll try to set up your early Friday night davening around Plag, so that your Mincha will be before Plag, and your Ma'ariv will be before after Plag. Well, the after Plag, and that will make everyone happy. However, even if you can't do that, so there is a slow view in the Rishonim, that Friday night is different than all the other nights. So Friday night, there is the motivation of Tosefta Shabbos, that you're not just davening early for personal reasons, but there is a clear mitzvah value in davening early, and that the Tosefta Shabbos justifies the tarte de sastre. That it has to be, you have to do in order to do Tosefta Shabbos, so then that Tosefta Shabbos is a higher priority, and some of the Rishonim do invoke that as a basis for Kula to have a different attitude Friday night than the rest of the week. So that,
but it takes it one step farther.
Okay.
That you change the date.
So, in terms of Tosefta, which we talked about a few months ago, so it could be that could be that's relevant as well. So we'll just